Welcome back to part two of today's Corolla Classics. This next clip is a listener request from Richard Woloski. And what's Richard's history with Adam?
He is Iron Man, who came to Adam's kid's birthday party that Adam talked about on air, and like how much effort he gave and how hot it must be, the costume, and related it to his own time with party pals and how he basically got a job but didn't take it. And he has a new request. You want to read it?
Yeah, sure. So Richard writes, "I was thrilled to hear you play the clip from the birthday party episode where I performed as Iron Man back in 2011. Being a huge fan of Adam, I was shocked to see that it was his kid's party. I was even more shocked that someone showed up to one of Adam's live shows in an Iron Man helmet claiming to be me. Is no one safe anymore?" I would like to request the follow-up clip where the next year I came back as a Ninjago for Sunny and Natalia's 6th birthday, and Adam did another 5 minutes on his show. Attached a pic, Richard Woloski. Well, Richard, I would love to hear that too. I remember how into Ninjago Sunny was. So it's so cool that you were a listener of the show and you got to attend these events.
Adam Carolla Show 844, Justin Halpern, not in this portion, Dave Damashek in from the top of the show, Allison Rosen, Brian Bishop. This one was actually recorded on 6/10/2012 and released on 6/11/2012. He thought it was from the 9th because it was, you know, the event happened over the weekend, but Adam recorded the next episode and talked about what happened over the weekend. In this episode, it's the exact chunk he wants. Thanks for requesting this, Richard. Hope you enjoy it.
Good to see you, Dave Damashek.
Ace, what's the poop, fella?
Oh, I got poop for use. Good to see you, Allison Rosen.
Hello, Adam Carolla.
And Bald Brian.
You're acting like a dick.
So much, Dr. Drew, so much to talk about.
That dropped back to stick around,
by the way. All right, please help me with a couple of things. We always talk about this. It was my kid's birthday party. We had it at one of these romper room places where, you know, it's just a petri dish of
filth. Are those everywhere in the country? Did those spring up nationally? Because I only became aware of them 5 years
ago.
Well,
first off, it wouldn't have worked when we were kids because my dad would have went into that strip mall and said, "So you get 2 hours, complimentary cake, bottomless soda, the kids can run around in the castle. How much? It's 500 and a half. Fuck that. Are you fucking nuts?" And he would have walked right out of there. As a matter of fact, he would never walk in. But all our parents would have went, "No, we got a backyard and a fucking pinata.
And
we're
a sprinkler.
Done. Yeah. We'll get the neighborhood pedophile to get in the clown outfit. We'll get him drunk so he can't do too much damage. Whiskey dick, you know. And we'll get him just to flop around back there and we'll save ourselves a couple $100.
Is that his professional name?
Whiskey
when he
dick.
Performed?
Yeah. Whiskey
hey,
dick.
Hey kids, look who it is, everybody. It's me, Whiskey Dick.
the good news is, well, the bad news is I'm drunk, but the good news is too drunk to rape. That's Whiskey Dick's thing.
So, yeah, you're perfectly safe.
Physically cannot perform. I'll vomit on you before anything else will
good
come out of me.
Good life lesson for the young
That's
ones,
right.
too. Right?
That's right. Know when to cut yourself off. So, no, these things would not exist because nobody would pay for this in the past. You're, like I said, your mom would have done the picnic table, the backyard, and that's about a couple of streamers, and that's about it. But now they take out these, rent out these whole rooms. You get 2 hours in there. I like the notion, too. This place is a jungle gym, you know, a carpeted, padded, you know, go from one slide into a toboggan, in down a flume, and up another thing, and down through a padded thing, and everything's padded, and the kids are rolling around. But at some point, we also have to hire entertainment. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure, you need the because I'm familiar with these things. You need somebody to do the balloons,
right,
and or face painter. Those are probably the two biggest.
But I'm
right?
saying, dressed up as a ninja or dressed up as, you know, Captain whoever or Iron Man. But I'm saying, like, if you just went to a ball game and you're just sitting up there in a luxury box and you had a brat in your hand and a beer, would they have to call a third person in to entertain you, or is this not enough? You know what I mean? You got cake, you got Pepsi, you got a bouncy castle. What do we need the ninja for?
I need a woman with puppets and an auto harp.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, why do we... Here's the thing. Everybody, stop having fun and come over here and watch the guy who I've paid more money to. And then you can get back to doing what you're doing.
And it's uncomfortable, the exchange you have with him when he completes his business. And
right.
you have to pay him, like, here, right. or her. Cinderella,
so,
here's
So he's this weird one, too, where you go, is the tip included in the fee, and then they give the Well, it is, but still a lot of people opt to, you know, it's that weird moment.
Yeah, you know, when you ask that, does anyone ever say, oh, yes, it is?
And by the way, that's it. Like, yeah. It either is or it isn't. And if it is, then technically you've tipped. But because there's such an emotional part of tipping, it's the same thing you get when you, the, first off, when you get the room service and they've worked the tip into it, that's a tariff. That's a tax. That drives me insane. And by the way, you know, they do that thing where it's like, well, on parties more than six, we work the tip in. A, that's bullshit. But B, this is you alone in your underpants in your hotel room. There's no reason to work a tip in. A guy comes to your fucking room.
He put the flower on the table in that little vase.
You roll it into your room. I always feel it's always weird. It's, I feel sort of invasive. Like when they come in and you want to clean up your underpants.
They always
want to
know, like, over here?
Shall I set this up? No.
It's the first time they've ever considered it, apparently. You're the first person to ever get something brought up. Where should this, does this, I don't know. Don't you do this 78 times a morning?
Right.
And there's two choices, by the bed or by those chairs.
And it's not like every room's a different shape with a completely different layout. There's 700 rooms all exactly the same. So
let me consult my blueprint.
You go to the strip mall and you get the romper room place, and then we got the guy. The guy had this funny moment because the guy we got is the same guy as Iron Man, the same guy we had last year. And Iron Man was busting his ass. Like, with the princess, who's in reality just a hot 23-year-old blonde, as I've said, blondes don't dance. You know, she shows up, you get 50 minutes out of her allotted hour, she sits there a little bit, poses for a couple pictures, doesn't break a sweat, and then she gets the fuck out of there. She's fucking some producer in Manhattan Beach, I'm sure. But the guy who's dressed up, you know, basically the Rudy of Iron Man, he's fucking dancing and doing and running around. The kids are chasing him. He's there for 3 hours. This is last year. And then at the end of the thing, I see the guy out there sweat out like 30 pounds of weight. And he said to me, you know where I got this outfit? And I said, you made it? Which you shouldn't say, I realize now.
No.
With sweaters or anything. And I said, you made it? And he said, no. I got it on Amazon. And I said, oh, good for you. And he said, I clicked through your site, man. And I said, oh, so he's a big fan. So when we were driving to the event, I thought it was cool. So we drive to the event, and my wife says, and by the way, the name, because the kids are in the back, and we don't want to, you know, God forbid they find out the guy's not an actual hand of God ninja, you know. And she goes, oh, and Richard, I can't remember the guy's name, but Richard Dick is the name of
Whiskey
the,
Dick.
And I said, yeah, okay. And she says, what? And I said, I know what you're talking about. And she says, you know what I'm talking about? And I said, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Well, I like when they call your bluff.
And she says, so you know I'm talking about the guy? And I said, yeah. And she said, how do you know? And I said, because I know everything, because I have a super brain, and I can tell by people's tone and their cadence. I always know what people mean. That's why I'm standing in, I always catch myself standing in between conversations, explaining to each party what the other one is saying, because it's weird that people don't understand inflection. And they don't understand tone and cadence and things like that. But I always understand. And I said, yeah, I know. And so later on, I said, so I guess Iron Man will be making an appearance. And my wife said, no, we don't have an Iron Man. And then I was confused. And I gave her this long-winded speech about how that's why they call me Ace. And I understand human emotion and inflection. And it's my job. And I did it on Loveline for 10 years and blah, blah, blah. And then she said, no Iron Man. And I was like, holy shit. And then we got the world's greatest ninja, or Ninjago, or whatever it is. It's like some kind of Lego ninja, whatever. This guy busts his ass for 3 hours. And then at the end, I was like, that guy was some kind of dynamite. And she was like, yeah, that's the guy. And I was like, but he's Iron Man. Like, I got caught up in it. He's like, yeah, I got a new outfit, douche. He's got more than one outfit. You understand?
Same guy?
Same dude.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. So Ninjago was the same guy. But I was confused for a while. I tried to steer clear of most appearances as I normally do. I met one guy, and I've had this happen to me two times now. I look forward, and I watch a lot of sitcoms where and just movies, like where guys would be sitting next to each other on a flight, and they go, what line you in, bub? You know, like, what's your line? What line you in? I remember that. It was like, part of being an adult is asking people, what's your line? What business you in? Mm-hmm. What do you do? And I feel like now that I'm adult, no one says that to anybody anymore. I guess there's too many stay-at-home dads or people are embarrassed.
It's only because I already know you. Oh, I ask everybody what's your line. I love that. I like that.
And it's kind of missing. But mm-hmm. I feel like there's too many non-jobs now. Like, I do something with a computer.
Right.
But I work from home.
I'm whiskey dick on weekends.
That's you can right. Hire the me greatest 3 hours. Clown. Tri-state area. So I did talk to one guy, and we're talking for a minute, and the conversation was running out, and I did the, hey, what's your line? What do you do? And he said, I sell insurance. Ugh. And this is two times in a row off now. Now I'm scared to ask, because I got nothing for selling insurance. There's nothing to come back to. You can sell almost anything. You can provide almost any kind of service. I can talk about anything. God forbid I get an air traffic controller or something. We can really dig into something. Sell insurance. I don't know where to... I can't go anywhere from there.
Because it's so boring, it's a cliche.
And you know it's not what they want to do. And also, yeah, it's a Woody Allen joke. But it's also... There's really... I just have no questions. There's no comp or liability. There's no discussion on any of it.
It's the job version of not yes anding.
Yes. Yeah. There's no...
I don't know where to go from here.
If he cared about the conversation, he would come up with a different line of work he was in.
But I love juggling.
I think Allison nailed it. Because I did that for a couple of years in Chicago before I made my way west. I did insurance sales, exactly. And I used to always say about it, it's one of those jobs that nobody ever said. In man's recorded history, no one ever said up to the age of 18, you know what I want to be when I grow up? No one ever did that. Well, it's a terrible gig.
Not only that, but it is the only line of work. It's the only line of work where I'm out of work is a better response. I have no job. Like, there's actually more to hang your hat on conversationally of I have no job than I sell insurance. Because mm-hmm. no job at least goes, what, factory, shut down, laid you off. Like, 31 years in the union. And then they shut down the fact, like, there's something. Yeah. We got something. There's at least a second question to did you do before you got laid off? Literally no job better than I sell insurance for
Undertaker,
our next conversation.
Undertaker is a worse job, but provides more opportunity for fascinating conversation.
Yeah.
Yes, this is just dead end. Yeah, I like that.
There's no second. Even the super boring, even teacher is what grade? You get to follow back up with what grade. All right. The other thing that I always complain about is this. The party place we got from 12:30 to 2:30. Thus, the party starts at 12:30. They will not let you in 10 minutes early, or that's the cutoff. Like, if you want to get in, they set up, they do everything. If you want to get in... 12:20 is the earliest you can get in for your 12:30, whatever. So we leave. We get a little bit of a late start. I take a sort of roundabout route to the place. And we pull up literally at like 12:29. My mom's already there. And there's already four couples there, like waiting at the, like, and I always talk about that. Yeah, with kids. That thing of getting there either exactly on time or early, everyone looks at it as a virtue. These people are pariahs. I cannot stand it. Look, if you're seeing a movie, that's a completely different thing. And if you're meeting someone for lunch or for dinner, that's a completely different thing. But when my wife tells her dad that Thanksgiving, people are going to start showing up around 4 o'clock, and he shows up at 3:18, and my wife is in a bathrobe, and she's doing something in the kitchen, and she's screaming at me, go get the door, I'm getting the stuffing ready. And then the person comes in and makes the proclamation. By the way, I don't know what kind of math you do. Like, you've been driving a car your entire life. You do the, to get from Chatsworth to Hollywood, 4 hours? You know what I mean? Like, the idea that you can't gauge. When you get older, you lose that ability to gauge.
Yeah.
And then you show up at very crucial, like 40 minutes early. And it's always crunch time, 40 minutes. It's never, everyone's dressed. Everyone's got their makeup on. Everyone's hair is done. The kids are all put together. And there's nothing to do in the kitchen. We're all just hanging around praying that somebody shows up. No, it's always that kind of crunch time, lighting the candles, getting the shit. Where's the ice? Someone's got to go to the liquor store and get the ice. And the person shows up, they make the proclamation, I'm not even here, but you are here because I'm arguing with your daughter and she's getting her shit together. And then a certain moment later, it's this, All right. Where's the bottle openers? The bottle, because nothing's out. Nothing. That fucking crucial. Doesn't 4 mean like 4:30? Is there anybody, if you're doing Thanksgiving from 4 until God knows when, 10 o'clock that night?
The next day.
Yeah. I mean.
Yes, and.
Is there somebody who shows up?
No, I'm a year early for the following Thanksgiving.
Is there a person that shows up at 4:30 and you're pissed off?
No, listen. No. I go out of my way to write at least 45 minutes or an hour after the prescribed time because I so dread the possible one-on-one conversation that I would have there. I think those people are weird. They're 180 degrees opposite of me because those people don't seem to sense how uncomfortable it is. Showing up at 3:18 and being the only person there while everybody's, hey, don't mind us. We're just trying to still get ready here. Like,
sure, you don't
mind
me. Help? Want
don't
me to
mind
blow dry
me.
Your hair?
Yeah.
I'm good.
It's so, I mean, really, I mean, my dad was the king of this, too. Like, if he said he was coming over to meet you and we're going out for breakfast at 10, he'd show up at, like, 9:39, and I'd literally be in the shower. Like, I was getting up and getting in the shower. I cannot eat.
Yeah, 10, hello?
10 o'clock, show up at 10:10. No one's going to be waiting for you.
So let's make some rules. If you're showing up somewhere where you can be entertained and you're not going to be in the hair of the person throwing the event or whatever, then it's okay to show up early.
Well,
right.
No, then it's academic. If it's a movie or a dinner, you're free to show up as early as you want. If the movie starts at 8 and you want to show up at 5 in the afternoon because you're a maniac, that's your business. You can't show up to the 8 o'clock movie at 8:20. That's
right.
not very courteous to the person or to dinner.
Three times, fool.
Because the lady or the person is waiting there for you. So there's certain things where it's off the table. You got to meet them at a certain time. That, but if you're anytime I think you're showing up to their house or you're showing up to an event where they don't need you, you're going to be one of the many, then you either inconvenience the person or you have that weird one-on-one time with the person while the person's trying to get ready.
How's everything been going for you?
I'm looking for that extended lighter. You know, the long lighter?
Yeah, we got that. Let me go look that, but I got to go dump the second bag of ice in. But I'll be right back with that lighter for you.
Yeah. That's how
Can I get you a drink?
Just show up 20 minutes late and speak.
Good rule of thumb, when the party's supposed to start, that's when you leave your house.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
Put you a good 15 or 20 minutes. Mm-hmm.
Now, what about a job interview?
No.
Well, certain things.
No.
No, I'm asking. I'm asking really what do you think is the right time to show up for a job interview?
Oh, that's on time or early or whatever. Everything except for when you're showing up at the person's house or it's one of these events. I mean, a job interview, you're going to get judged if you're late. You're going to get that guy can't show up to an interview late. How's he going to show up on time to a job? No, all that early, fine, but not too early because it fucks with the person because they go, so-and-so's waiting for you out in the whatever. Just on time. It's pretty easy to do. And also, if you do, in fact, show up and you're 40 minutes early, feel free to go out and get a Starbucks and walk around the block a time or two and then come in. You don't have to bang on the person's door. Speaking of drinks, I don't know why, but I was over at Bill Simmons' place on Friday for...
Yeah, Ace Man, by the way, I personally blame you for the loss of the pass. I'm betting on
it. I was attacked viciously. Verbally, but viciously.
For the Patriots loss.
For the Pats loss, because I put money on them. I didn't want to put money on them. Jimmy called and forced me to put money on a team so he could bet the opposite. You know, so it wasn't. He meant it. Like, he called 3 days with Cousin Sal.
You've replaced now Mike August as
the
pariah. The
loser. Yeah. The cooler. He called me. Yeah. I was laughing the other day on stage. Like, some guys have mojo. I have nojo. I have the opposite, but you can set your watch on.
That clip from Iron Man / Ninjago, Richard Woloski. Thanks for writing in. And also featuring Dave Damashek, who recently was just kicked out of his fantasy football league.
Great. That was a great story. I'm so glad Mike August used his epic storytelling skills to make sure we heard it the right way.
Before the show, I went to Mike and I went, hey, should we play the clip first or do you want to set it up? And he says, let me set it up. So, you could see our frustration.
Well, in fairness to Mike, it's not your fault. I think Gary was in charge and I think ASA. This was Adam and Brian. When Dag came on as Teddy Pendergrass, they played the drop of him before the episode aired by a week. and they completely stepped on the joke and ruined it for everybody. Because they just love the bit so much, but they're not listeners, so they can't conceive of how frustrating that was. And then when you heard it, you're like, okay, it's funny, but you just it's like you're telling me how great a movie is, and then you ruined it for me.
Sorry about that. All right.
Yep. So Mike August isn't so bad now. That's why Mike got your back, bro.
That remains to be seen. All right. The next clip, our last clip of the day, we're going to do another live show. This is from Amalfi. It's the restaurant that Adam used to co-own in L.A. We used to go there every Thursday. Every once in a while, we go on there Mondays, and we charge just a ticket price at the door. People would just walk in and watch us do a live podcast at a restaurant. We set up a stage that we'd bring in all the time. Well, back in 2013, we did that, and we had Kevin and Bean on.
The legends, the guys who hosted the morning show that Adam first called into as Mr. Bertram, that launched his career, that gave you your job, that is the very reason we're talking and hosting this show together, a million other different unimaginable computations of things that wouldn't have come to pass had Kevin and Bean not been hosting that show that day with Adam calling in and everything arranged how it was. It's Adam Carolla Show 1009, Kevin Ryder, Gene Bean Baxter, Allison Rosen, Brian Bishop, live on stage, February of 2013. This is part one live from Amalfi. We'll be playing part two tomorrow on the Corolla Classics feed. Until then, enjoy this part one.
Allison Rosen here. Bald Brian over there. I believe Bean will be joining us from Kevin and Bean. And also on stage live, Kevin of Kevin and Bean, baby. The great Kevin Ryder. Great to see you, my friend.
I'm Kevin. So nice to meet you.
Good to see you.
You are who?
Mr. Bertram, do you?
Mr. Bertram.
Yeah. You'll be glad to know things. Ah, there's Bean. Hi, Bean. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, where's Homo? I mean, Waldo. Waldo, sorry. I like those glasses, buddy. How you doing?
Doing fine. Good to see you, Ace Man. Hi, Kevin. Hi, guys.
Good to see you.
Let's talk about the glasses, if you don't mind, just for a second.
Just for 20, 25 minutes, and then we'll move on with the show. Yeah.
The Mr. Magoo glasses?
Yes.
He says, I swear to God, he says, people come up to me all the time and tell me they love them.
Right.
It's just like bullshit. That's
right.
Right. Am I allowed to cuss?
Yeah, go ahead.
Bullshit.
Yeah, no, like, if you have a really ugly baby, people will go, oh, could I get a picture of your beautiful baby? But they're just saying it so they can show your friends to talk about how ugly your baby is.
That's the glasses.
You have an ugly baby on your head.
I'm standing by these glasses. People love them. They really. I guess,
see what I'm saying?
But love for them.
Here, let me explain. Here's how you know people don't love them, and I'll explain why. There are things in life that people love, like people love Priuses. So you see a lot of Priuses when you go out on the street. If you know where I'm going. People like hamburgers, sure. So there's a hamburger stand on every corner. If there's a lot of people that wear glasses. If people liked looking like a retarded skin diver, then you would see these glasses everywhere. When you turned on the news, the anchors would be wearing those glasses, and you would see all the hot chicks walking down the red carpet. So you know like those.
They'd be so popular, they'd be like, do you need those really, or are they just fashion frames?
They'd see them with just glass lenses and no lenses. So that's how you know people don't like them. They don't have
them. These frames are not easy to find. They're not in every lens crafters. They're very specific. It's a very small one.
Yeah, you have to go to a Toys R Us in Alhambra in order to find those lenses and those frames. Yeah, okay. All right.
Well, I'm not wearing the rest of the Where's Waldo outfit, so at least we got that going for us.
All right. Bean and Kevin got me started in radio so many years ago, and you guys, it's all them.
You guys, I do agree with that.
You guys are going on 30 years now? I mean, now that Mark and Brian have retired and Rick D's, well, he sort of retired, and then there was such a groundswell of support that there's fans wouldn't have it, so his fan dragged him back, his singular fan dragged him back, but... You guys are not only, you know, perennial number one in Los Angeles, but, it's weird because when we got started, you were, what, five, 6 years in?
Yeah, it was 5 or 6 years, yeah.
And you guys got started, like, how? Like, how did you guys get hooked up? Like, everyone knows the sort of me and Jimmy story, but... And everyone knows the Jimmy got to you guys story, although right. I wouldn't mind hearing a little more about that. But how, what is your story?
You want to take this one?
You guys were at a Lens Crafters in Phoenix.
I mean, you know, we got a radio job the way people have always got radio jobs, which is we applied. We had never done a morning show together before. We'd never done a morning show separately before. But we could see... You know, in the shifts that we were doing, that the morning guys were the ones who were having all the fun and doing all the traveling and making all the money and getting all the chicks. So we said, that's where the action is. If you're going to be in radio, do mornings.
Right.
So we just put a little tape together and started sending it around. And it was, you know, friend of a friend type deal. It got to the right person. And it was just, I mean, it was just lucky. We were just in the right place at the right time. That there was a radio station that was willing to take a chance on a couple of yahoos who had no experience and no track record. And the way they looked at it, was, look, we can't, this was K-Rock, and K-Rock was a crazy radio station in the 80s. I know a lot of people in the room remember what K-Rock was like.
Sure.
In the 80s. I mean, anything went, right? I mean, it was Dead Kennedys at 7 a.m. So they were going to try to, you know, make the station a little bit more palatable to the masses, and they said, let's bring in some guys to do a morning show. They'd never really attempted a morning show before. So rather than hire some DJs who had some bad habits, they just thought, let's hire some guys who've never done it before and train them. And that's what they happened. So
he
we were kind of the
those
guinea
glasses,
pigs,
though.
Right.
In the early
no.
days.
No, my earliest memory of Bean was Bean drove, I say, a car that is gayer than the Miata, and I'll tell you why. It's the a Red Rabbit Cabriolet, and the reason it's gayer than the Miata is because it's a front wheel drive car, which makes it adds to the gayness. Ironically, the rear wheel drive straightens you out a little bit, and there's a whole spec series for racing the Miata. So the Cabriolet front-wheel drive Rabbit is the gayest car. You drove that car, and I remember very clearly it was parked out on the street all the time. And I said, why is Bean's car parked out in the street and Kevin's car down in the underground parking? And you said... Because Bean didn't want to pay for parking.
Oh, that's very Bean.
And I said, you mean the radio station doesn't give you a parking space? And they're like, no way. And that was my introduction into radio and how cheap they
right.
were. That you would actually show up at 4:30, 5 in the morning. It'd be dark outside. There'd be no security. And you'd park down the street and walk into the station.
Yeah. But what you didn't know is that Bean, when he drove that cabriolet... He's 6'6".
Right.
So the top of the car was here, and Bean's head was like, wait,
out,
it was like
over
he was
the windshield.
Standing up.
That's why I needed the protective goggles. Also, if you recall Bean had a scuff in that car, and I went and brought some rubbing compound and actually rubbed out the fender at some point just because it was bothering me. He rear-ended another guy, and yeah, good stuff. But no, I did. I was kissing. I was in ass kiss mode back then. So
let me tell you this. The Ace Man has always been handy, and I have very few memories about anything. I have a terrible, terrible memory, but I do remember you putting the dog door in at my house.
Yes.
You building shelves for me at my house to put CDs on. You and Jimmy helped raise my barn for my cows. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you used to do back
right.
then.
Yeah. We're like Amish who drank a lot and swore and liked electricity. That's right. By the way, that doggy door was called the doggy door, but it was for a pig or a baboon or something, right?
Whatever it was, yeah. But this this may go to what Kevin is saying, and as he accuses me of being eternally cheap, is that I looked around and said, I got to put a doggy door in. I could pay a handyman $100 to do it, or I could get Corolla over here for a six-pack. So I think that's why I tried to hire you for as many things as possible.
You couldn't get Corolla for a six-pack now, though.
No, no.
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 It is a 12-pack or even a party ball. I built Bean not just a CD case at his house. I believe I built you a rack that held over 10,000 CDs. We did the math on it. Bean, how many CDs do you have now?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I had to move out of the 3-car garage to put him in there. I mean, it's it may be a couple of hundred thousand now, Ace.
Well, the great news is it'll be a great legacy for your pigs. So, yeah.
And also, CDs are forever. They're not going out of style.
Yeah, no. They were shoveling them as I walked through the doorway.
Adam, can I
butt in for 1 second?
Yes.
You didn't build me shit.
Yeah, I know. I know.
What's up with that? You're over there installing a pig door.
You didn't have anything to build. I built a pig door. We raised a barn. You didn't have anything to build. You had a nice house.
How do you know? You never asked.
I went to your... I built the studio that you were in for a while. I built you at least a locker in that studio.
That's true.
And we used to go to Kevin's and go in his basement and play poker. That was good times. But you guys met Jimmy. How did the Jimmy marriage come about? And did you ever realize, I mean, I knew you always liked Jimmy, but did you go, like, this kid's got it?
I don't think so, because we pretty much argued with every idea he ever had.
Right, right.
He would bring up an idea, he would go, I should do sports, and we both said, no, I don't think that'll
right,
work.
Right, right.
And then, of course, he brought you in, and he said, right. I've got this boxing instructor, and he's really funny, we should put him on the air, and Beatty and I were like, no, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
And Jimmy said, you know, here's the phone number, call in. It's probably not going to work. And but make it good, because if they don't like you, it's never going to happen again. There'll be no second shots, right? Like, yeah. If either somebody's got a stand-up triple or home run, otherwise there's not a second trip to the plate, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Except for us.
No, you guys.
We bat about 100, but
yeah, you guys. It's
never, our show.
It's never going to end. So yes, Brian.
I had a question for Kevin and Bean. Adam alluded to it earlier. What was Kiss Ass Corolla like? Because in the last few years, he's gotten used to people kissing his ass. What was he like doing the ass kissing?
I don't know. You have to ask Bean. What was Kiss Ass Adam like?
Yeah, because apparently he did nothing for Kevin. You know, I just remember, look, here's the thing I'll always say about Adam and Jimmy, and it sounds like a, you know, kind of a queer thing to say to Adam's face, but I mean, I don't feel like either one of these guys has ever changed a day despite all of the success that they've had. I mean, I still feel like I can call Adam
on the phone. Jimmy's a huge asshole now.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, no, is it David Banner?
Bruce Banner.
Bruce Banner.
I have no idea.
Yeah, he's changed more than Bruce Banner has when he gets angry. No, he's a colossal douche now. He won't even return my calls. No, it's true. Jimmy is Jimmy, and I'm me, except for the difference now is if Jimmy said, I have an idea for you two, you couldn't tell him to fuck off.
Right, right.
Right.
We would go, that's the greatest idea ever. And inside we would think, that won't work.
Right. Otherwise, or you just argue forever. But I'm sorry, you were complimenting me on how humble I am. Go ahead. I'll sit down and accept it.
I have a feeling, Adam, that if we didn't have the distance between us, and I had an engineering problem in the house that required you and a tool belt, I still think you'd come over and help out if you had the time to do it. I don't think that you're above that. I still think you're a guy, you know, who still does stuff like that. So I think you're probably about the same in the ass kissing, to get to Brian's question, today as you were then. I think you're willing to help out a friend.
Well, here's the whole deal. I didn't have a lick of success until I was 30 plus. I was technically 30 when I met you guys, or just turned 30, and had zero success until about 31, 32. So by then, the cement is dry and the sidewalk of your psyche. Some kid can't come around with a stick and put shitty initials in it. Now,
if you fall in love, you can't even write that in a heart.
You can't do it. Mm-mm. No, it's frozen. So if you have zero success from 0 to 30, you will essentially be who you were until the grave. That's about it. It's real hard. Unless you start abusing drugs, and that's my next move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but conversely, if you have a ton of success and you're super hot before 30, then even if it all goes to shit, you still walk around thinking that you're all that. And then people look at you thinking, where did you get this confidence?
Well, the thing about me is I was always hot, but I didn't know it. And that's what made me hot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I was hot, but I don't know it, so I'm even hotter. You
right.
see?
Exactly.
No, nobody like, tell him.
Yeah.
But Adam, let me ask you a question.
Down low.
My early impression of you was that you liked construction.
Yes.
More than showbiz.
Yes.
It was the most bizarre thing. He would go, yeah, I have to go do a TV show today. But then I get to work on a house.
Yeah.
No, that's the strangest thing.
Well, that's how I'm wired. But I realized that construction, it's a weird thing because show business, and speaking of show business, I want to thank GoToMeeting for giving us a hand here and getting Bean up on the blower for us. Here's the thing about show business, about comedy, and what we do. Somebody decided you have to love it. You couldn't just do it because it paid well, and you got to work with some cool people and do a little bit of travel and meet some people. You know
no,
what
you
I mean?
Hear, like, you, I do it because I have
you
to.
You have to have a passion for it, like it's an art.
It chose me.
No, yeah, I do it for the money.
Let me just butt in.
Go ahead.
99% of the jobs in radio you would not put up with unless you love it.
Right.
We happen to have a great position.
That's a good point.
Which you came into.
Right.
But to get there, we worked for so many assholes.
I know.
That really you do kind of have to love it to stick with it.
Well, yeah, I love it. Listen, as I said...
We brought you in at the top.
As I said, I know. As I said, we. I showed up at your radio station, waited in the hallway for Jimmy.
That's true, by the way.
It's true. As I said to your boss, program director Kevin Weatherly, when we were... it was Trip Reeb. It was our old general manager, Trip Reeb. He said, when I'm starting Loveline, he said, good news, Adam. I want to make you the highest paid part-time employee at K-Rock, which basically meant I was going to host a syndicated radio show for like $28,000 a year. And I said, well, Trip, here's the deal. I didn't get in this for the money, and I love talking. I love Dr. Drew, and I love sharing my ideas, and I would do it for free, and I didn't get into it to get rich, but I didn't get into it to make you rich. So here's the deal. There's a number here. It ain't free. It ain't 28K. It's somewhere. And again, I'd do it for free, but I'm not going to... I'll do it for free if you're getting paid nothing.
Yeah, somebody's making that
but
money.
But if you're getting rich, I ain't doing it for free, and I just want my cut. It doesn't need to be the lion's share, and that's when we sort of worked it out. Yeah, I remember that conversation clearly, and I also remember my Ricky Rackman conversation where I said, you can leave the two of us on the air together for as long as you like, but history will not be kind to that decision. 10 years from now, they're
Adam,
not
gonna...
Yes.
In retrospect, do you think that you and Dr. Drew doing Loveline is the golden age of that show? Do you think that's the best lineup Loveline ever had when you look back at all the different incarnations it's been through?
I think I'd choose Psycho Mike.
Yeah, of course. People used to say to me all the, you know, people used to go all the time, like, whoa, what's the magic? Like, what's, they always want to talk about the format of everything. You know, they're always like, why does this show work? And I'd go, because of me and because of Drew. And they'd go, oh, but really, come on, honestly. And I'd go, no, I'm good and he's good and together we're a little better and that's the format. And he's like, everyone would be like, what's the trick? And it's, there's no trick. I was good at it. Drew is still good at it, and we're good together, and that's the way it always was. And I always was aware of it, and you know, back to the carpentry analogy, I would tell people quickly if they said, look, are you a good carpenter? I'd say, yeah, I'm a really good carpenter because I'm competent. I understand it. I've done a lot of it, and I'm good with my hands. But if you talk that way about yourself as a performer, they're like, all right, jack off. All right. But it's the same. You should own it. Look, if you're good at hosting a radio show, and obviously you guys are good at hosting a radio show, you wouldn't be number one for as long as you've been number one.
You should
own it.
I'd say the best. I would go with
the best. You're the best.
Good is a little undersell.
Yeah, I'm sorry. If you're scrumdilicious at hosting a radio show. Now, Bean, I know you're the kind of guy who would be up at 4:35 every morning, if not just to slop the pigs, but
but to harvest the eggs from the ostriches and make that big ostrich omelet you'd make. Like, you'd be up at pre-dawn anyway. Kevin, you'd be pissed off.
True.
I could see you, like, in your underpants around noon yelling at a neighbor about the leaf blower. Like, that would be your schedule.
That's very
but
true.
But yet, for 28 and a half years...
23.
You've gotten up at 4:45 in the morning.
Yeah, that sucks.
That sucks, right?
We have a great gig, but it really does suck.
Do you ever get used to it?
Sort of. You get used to being tired.
Right, right.
What happened? He's giving us the cut sign.
You got it?
Oh, keep going. All right.
Yeah.
I thought we had to go to the commercial.
You never quite get used to it, do you?
Well... Only on Saturday and Sunday you wake up alert, and that's super frustrating.
I used to freak myself out when I did mornings because I would get up at like 11 on Saturdays and Sundays and go, wow, I just slept 6 hours longer than I'm supposed to. It wasn't like, well, I normally get up at 5, so now I'm going to sleep until 6:45. I'd go right back to nighttime shift Adam on the weekends, which was brutal. The worst, and you guys, Bean, you must have this a lot. Oh, no, wait a minute. You don't go outside. But, Kevin, you have this. People do this thing. They go, oh, what do you do? And you go, I do morning radios. They go, oh, what's your shift? And you go, 6 to 10. And then they go, oh, so what time do you have to wake up? And then you
every
go,
person.
You go, 4:45. And they will literally go, oh, my God, I would kill myself. Oh, my God, I would kill myself. And I always go... You know, I didn't say I used to work mornings. I have to fucking do it tomorrow, douche.
Down with the encouragement.
Hey,
yeah.
Ace Man.
Yes.
You mentioned when you were doing a morning radio show, and I don't think we've ever talked to you about this, but it was really weird for us when you got that job because we were huge fans of yours, and obviously we lost you on our show at that point. And you were working for the same company as us, but competing against us.
Yeah.
So we were 49% wanting to, you know, to beat you, and you have nothing but misery over there and no success. And 51%, we were like, God, we love Adam. We want nothing but the best for him. I just wondered if you ever thought of what you were doing to us when you were working across the street against us.
You couldn't have chose a better ratio for this story.
Yeah, I was like, 51%, you know, be successful. 49%, die, die, die a horrible death in a fiery car crash on your way into Kansas.
That was a weird time, though, for our own company to pit us against each other.
You know, it's weird for me, and you know, there's an element where, you know, not really being a human being doesn't pay dividends all the times, but there's certain points when not having nerve endings pays off, and it's things like this, like people would say. Oh, my God, you're replacing Howard Stern. How nervous must you be? I mean, aren't you totally freaked out by that?
You should have been.
And I was like, nah, I don't think so. Like, I didn't have that feeling. I didn't have that feeling at all. Because I did his show so many times, and I knew him so well. I was like, nah, I feel fine. I should have been, but I didn't. But I used to say, like, people go, like, are you sure you want to do this? Are you nervous about it? I would always use this analogy. I would go, listen, Jennifer Aniston used to be married to Brad Pitt. And then Brad Pitt dumped her for Angelina Jolie, and now Jennifer Aniston's single. And the next dude who came around who got to fuck Jennifer Aniston, everyone must have said to him, oh, my God, Brad Pitt, he's like the best-looking dude in the world. You don't look as good as he looks with his shirt off. And I would always go, yeah, that's true, but do you not want to fuck Jennifer Aniston? Like, would you turn down that pussy? If the answer is yes, then enjoy.
So the show is Jennifer Aniston's pussy
in this
story?
No, you replace Jennifer Aniston with Jack Silver,
oh,
a 51-year-old Jew, and there you have it. Yeah, that was awesome. No, I always figured that you guys were so established and K-Rock was such a powerhouse. And I always used to say that, like, K-Rock was such, like, a cool club in Soho with no sign on it, but that everyone knew where it was and everything. And our,
you know, Kayla Sex was like a store that sold stonewashed jeans from like the late 80s. Like everything was a day glow and neon.
That's a very apt analogy.
Yeah, we were so incredibly uncool. Like we just had the dorkiest station with the Vans looked stupid. Everything was dumb.
So you never expected success.
No, what was the guy who would do all our promotions? Like you guys had John Frost back in the day. And like right. John, like K-Rock used to do really innovative, cool, cutting edge. You know, K-Rock was like MTV when MTV was MTV. You know, it was a cool place. And we had Dick Gozinia doing those stupid commercials. Like, who was our guy?
Yeah, with Burner? Richard
yeah,
Burner?
But what was the guy's name? Come on.
Rich Berner?
Dick Manley. Dick Manley. Yeah.
Dick Manley here.
Hey, this is Dick Manley. Oh, that's so clever. It's so funny. You douchebags ought to listen to Adam Carolla's in the morning.
Dick Manley here for KLSX.
Yeah.
That's how it went.
It was just the opposite of everything that was cool and interesting and cutting edge and different.
And subtle. Plus yes. Opposite of subtle. Yes.
Judging by our ratings, we were no threat to Kevin and
yes,
Dean.
Yes, we were no threat.
I do have to say this, though. I don't give compliments very well, but in the early days, people would try to get us upset. You wouldn't mention us very often, but occasionally you'd say something.
Right.
And they would say, oh, Adam was talking bad about you. This yeah, is, oh, yeah, you need
people,
to be upset.
People never stop doing that.
Yeah. Right. And from day one, I would always write back, if Adam says it, it's fine. I love Adam. He's funny. He knows me. He wouldn't say anything.
Well,
so I don't care.
Thank you. And the whole thing about, like, you know, starting the feud, I don't know whether you're Bill Maher, Donald Trump, or whoever. I don't know if there's actual hatred or you're just trying to get some ink. I don't know how it worked, but it never seemed part of comedy to me. Like, it seemed like almost the antithesis of comedy. Like it's that way. It's weird. I always think it's weird that music has a bunch of attitude. Because I understand sports having attitude. I understand boxers and UFC guys having attitude. But I never understood where they're like some British rock band and they all have super skinny arms and are pasty, but they're folded and their sleeves are cut off and they're all looking at each other. And the album is called Get Out of the Way or Die. And it's like, you guys are musicians, right? What are we doing here? Storming a castle? Or are you just fucking playing Rocky like a hurricane? Like, where's all the attitude coming from? And like morning radio would do that. They'd have like the pictures of the guys standing there looking pissed off with their arms folded, like coming at you in the morning. And by the way, the last thing I want at 6:45 is a bunch of attitude.
Yeah.
Woo, I'm scared to get in the car. He's beating me up with his words.
I hear you. I hear you, Adam. But I will tell you that we felt some of that rage that you're talking about when guys like Ryan Seacrest and Rick Dees before him were mopping us up. You know, when they were winning year after year after year, we couldn't get anywhere close to them. It took a really, really long time. That was really inexplicable to us, how somebody could make the choice to listen to a Ryan Seacrest show instead of us or anybody else.
Yeah, it's sad. I know. There's Rick Dees doing his Heine Wine bit from 1951. And beating you guys in the ratings.
Not just beating, mopping us up.
But it was fun. It was kind of fun. By the way, if you pull up like the name of all Chris Rock's specials, it's like, I'll make you bleed with my words.
Bring
and
the
stuff
pain.
Like that. Bring the pain. Like if you just look up Dane Cook and Chris Rock's comedy specials, they're more like names for pro wrestling events. Yeah. It's really weird. I never got that with the comedy, but here's the thing. It was kind of fun being for that little period in time when you guys and we guys, you, me, and Jimmy, and the rest of the guys there were like a cool indie band that wasn't selling out stadiums, but yet the word on the street was kind of cool. Like I did, there was that vibe at K-Rock in the later, you know, mid 90s.
I don't remember that
90s.
Because
I think I made that up. That was bullshit. Yeah, we were just number 7. That was it.
You want the list?
All right, so find the list of Chris Rock and Dane Cook.
I'll get to Dane in a second. Okay. But Chris is our Bring the Pain, Bigger and Blacker, Never Scared, and kill the messenger. These could definitely be like UFC events.
Right. Never scared, kill. Just fucking tell some jokes, get your money, get the fuck off stage. We'll drop the attitude. By the way, Chris Rock, you don't scare anybody. What the fuck's there? Yeah.
I hope I live through his concert.
He's the one black person I'm not scared of.
Even though he named his album Bigger and Blacker, which is arguably
other
a threat.
People of color I'm threatened and frightened by, but not Chris Rock.
Hey, B, we need to change our slogan to Bigger and Blacker.
That's right.
I like it. Let's start using that tomorrow morning. That's a great idea.
I used to remember when I'd be Mr. Burcham and I'd be talking about the big black swinging caucus. And the big swinging black caucus, I think, is what I'd bring up. And I think at least our GM would always get pissed off about that.
Adam, let me ask you another question being on our show back then. Do you mind?
Sure, no.
And again, we've really never had a chance to have a conversation like this, you know, face to face about the good old days. But I suspect that it must have been at times very frustrating for you and Jimmy to both be so funny, funnier than we were, and to have us be running the show and having our ideas win sometimes. There must have been times where we weren't around where you were like, these guys are assholes and they're not good and what are we doing here? And let's get rid of those guys and take over.
No, right? Yeah, well, probably for Jimmy, because Jimmy has high self-esteem.
Yes, he does.
I have no self-esteem, not low self-esteem. I just don't have self-esteem. I just I was not raised in an environment that had any self-esteem.
But
so,
you knew you were funnier than either me or Bean.
I knew I'm funnier than everybody. Right, okay. I'm funnier than everybody on the planet. There's nobody's funnier than me.
Right, but Bean's saying we're in a position to say, no, that's stupid.
Yeah.
That had to annoy you.
No, you know what? It's weird because I always had my understanding in life just from where I came from was don't expect anything. There's always going to be somebody at the top, and it's not like he's going to be there because he's better than you. He's just going to be there because there's going to be someone at the top, and you're going to have to take shit from that person, and it doesn't matter whether you're swinging a hammer or swinging a microphone. You're going to have to listen to that person, and that's just the way it's going to be. So for me, I'd made my peace with that years ago, and the notion that I was just making a little scratch, like $50 a bit on your show, was to me succeeding beyond all expectations.
Low expectations are important.
Zero expectations are where I came from. See, you have to understand, I had 10 years of being the funniest guy in the room and not making a penny before that. Now, at least I was making $200 a week being the funniest guy in the room. Without sounding like a colossal douchebag. But no, seriously, I don't know.
Own it. It's all right.
Yeah, I am funnier than anybody living right now.
I watched you on The Burn last night. I emailed you about this. And as I was watching, I was thinking, he really is funnier than anyone on the planet. You are so good. I mean, you're always good on TV, but I was just, I was like,
thank you. But
I was so proud.
I know that Michael Ian Black is going to be number, 21 on Rolling Stone's funniest whatever. And I know we're going to do The Burn together. And I know I'm going to be funnier than him. But I know next year when the list comes out, I'm not going to crack the top 50 again. So I'm aware of that. And like I'm aware, and it's never, I never looked at it as I'm funnier than them, so I should get paid more or they should listen to me. It wasn't it's something we should all teach our kids, because think of how many smart people you know who make less than 50 grand a year. I mean, I know some really smart, poor fuckers. I really do. As a matter of fact, the dumber people I know actually make more money than the smarter people I know. So there's this thing where you expect in life to be compensated, like I'm going to get $1,000 for every IQ point a year or something. It doesn't work that way. It's about applying yourself. It's about who got there first. It's about whose name is on the show. You know, I haven't told you guys this in a while, but I said to Jimmy from the word go, he said to me, when he was trying to get me on your radio show, he said, what do you do? Like, what's your strength? What kind of comedy do you do? And I said, I just hang around and shoot the breeze, man. That's what I do. I roll, baby. Put me in the middle of the conversation and let me roll. And he said,
you can't do that.
Yeah, that's the wrong answer.
And I said, why can't I do that? He said, that's what Kevin and Bean do. What the fuck do they need you sitting in between them rolling for? And even though I knew I could add to that, I knew I'd never convince you of that, and you have to earn your way to that position. So he said, do a character. And I said, I don't do characters. And he said, well, you better start. And that's where Mr. Burcham came
Jimmy
in.
Jimmy was a guy, though, who we would overrule. And I really do think in his mind he thought we were idiots.
No.
I really do.
He liked us.
Right.
He liked us, but he knew we were wrong.
No, Jimmy, but I've done interviews
and
with
Jimmy. We were.
Oh, no, he knows. Listen, I've had arguments with Jimmy when I told him my invention for yogurt called Fruit in the Middle. Not fruit on the bottom, because fruit on the bottom, you get the yogurt all the way up the stem of the spoon when you're trying to stir it up. I said, fruit in the middle, that's the way to go. He looked at me and he said, that's never going to work, ever, in a million years. You know those conversations that Jimmy would have, like he worked on the yogurt board for a while? Or like
he does consider himself an expert.
My dad worked for the Knudsen family for many years. I remember long nights down in the yogurt lab standing next to him. So he'd go, that's the worst idea I've ever heard in my life. That'll never work in a kabillion light years, 1,000 lifetimes. That'll never work. And I go, why, Jimmy? Why wouldn't fruit in the middle work? I think that's a fine idea. He said, I'll tell you why it's not going to work. Because all yogurt starts as fruit at the top, and it all seeps down to the bottom. So if you put it in the middle, it would just seep down to the bottom. And I said, I don't think that's true. I have yogurt. I've had like strawberry yogurt, and it's pristine at the top. There's no little bits of seeds and pulp or anything like that. And he said, absolutely, 100%, that's how it would work. And I was like, but that's how he is.
He's
like,
no one is more sure of himself than Jimmy.
Oh, my God. He said, we were on a cruise once, and I said, who is this song? Because I know it's Peaches and Herb, but I can't remember the name of the song. He said, not only is this not Peaches and Herb, it sounds nothing like Peaches and Herb. And it was Peaches and Herb. So it had to sound a little bit like Peaches and Herb, right? Considering it was them.
Not to Jimmy.
He would do it like, Jimmy'd be the kind of guy, like if you'd go, well, I like Taco Bell. I don't know. I like Del Taco. He'd go, Del Taco is 1,000,000,000% better than Taco Bell. They're the fucking rice and beans and a Mexican folding it up in a flour tortilla with a little fucking hot sauce. I don't think you could tell the difference. But he'd go, well, this is 1,000,000,000% better. This one is a -2,000,000. And that would be it. That's how he always works.
He was done with that conversation.
Yeah. I never, and he's also one of these guys, too, where you went, I don't think you're right about that. I will bet you $10 zillion right now. And you'd go, well, I don't have that kind of money on me. I mean, I could probably raise $5 zillion by this afternoon, but I don't
Neither
think
Neither did
could,
he, by the way. He just knew he was blind.
Yeah. All you would have had to say to him is parfait.
Yeah. Oh, the yogurt. Yeah.
It's yogurt with fruit in the middle.
I don't know if they had it back then.
Oh, they stole your idea?
Yeah, they may have ripped off my idea, yeah.
Didn't his certainty get you in trouble once with some clams or some clam chowder?
Oh my God. You want to talk about the worst of all? All right. It's we're doing the Man Show. It's like season 3 of the Man Show. Here's our plan. We're gonna eat. We're having a lunch break. We do like rehearsal, like noon or something. We'd stop for lunch at like 2 in the afternoon, shoot the first show at 4, second show at 5, and then Jimmy's got a party bus. Oh, yeah. Jimmy's got a party bus, and it's a dude named Eric's bachelor party, and we're going to the city of industry to the Spearmint Rhino. Okay. Yeah. So.
Nothing but the best.
Nothing but the best. So, party bus. So we're sitting down for lunch. It's like 2 in the afternoon. And the lunch is being catered, and they have a clam chowder. And I'm eating the clam chowder, and I'm sitting next to Jimmy. And I go, something tastes off about this clam chowder. Like, there's something wrong with these clams. It tastes weird. And he said, those are smoked clams. That's the way they use smoked clams. I said, I never had clam chowder with smoked clams. Yeah, well, they made them with smoked clams, and that's why it has that weird smoky flavor. And I said, really? Because this tastes weird. But you don't argue with Jimmy about seafood, especially.
No.
So I was like, all right, Bean will pop back up. So I was like, I swear, God, this tastes weird, Jim. And he's like, it's because it's smoked. This is perfectly good. And I said, okay, you're the chowder expert. I only know yogurt and chowder. Those are your two things. So I finished the bowl. He finished the bowl. Everyone finished because everyone's saying to Jimmy, something's weird with this chowder, Jimmy. And he's like, smoked clams, enjoy. Everyone eats it.
Well, he's got that personality, too, where if he says it, he says it so confidently that you don't for a second think of arguing back.
Here's how impressive Jimmy is in the arguing department. We were driving, and I'll get back to shitting in my pants in a second.
Whoa, I didn't know you were heading for shitting your pants.
Oh, yeah. Oh, not just me. A bus.
He's shitting other people's pants.
A bus of people, yes. We swapped. We had a pant donor program where we swapped pants so we could shit in other people's
musical
pants.
Musical pants.
Yeah, so that way you weren't as embarrassing. I shit my pants. You'd go home and go, no, that's not my shit. Dust it for Prince, baby.
That's better?
I think, you
it's
know.
It's better if it's not your shit?
It requires an explanation, but technically, did I shit my pants, Your Honor? No, I did not. Tom Stern, director of The Man Show, did.
That's right.
All right, but hold on. Here's how Jimmy could argue. Here's how Jimmy would argue. We were going to Yosemite once for somebody's wedding, and I've grew up in the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles. I've spent my whole life there, right? And you know Jimmy with directions, right?
The worst.
Remember when we were in Seattle and he was going to show us his old radio station and we drove around Seattle for 4 fucking hours? He couldn't find his own place of employment. He worked there for a year and he couldn't find it.
But his confidence level of being able to find it.
Oh, yeah. Like, the confidence of Magellan, but the direction finding of the aforementioned Mr. Magoo. So here we are, and we're going to leave. We're leaving my house. He's picking me up. We're leaving my house. We're driving to Yosemite. We got to get on the 5 freeway and just take the 5, right? The Grapevine, whatever. I say, all right, Jimmy, let's go down the hill. We'll get on the 101. We'll take the 101 through to the 170, and that'll take us to the 5. He says, no. We go on the 134 toward Pasadena. I said, 134 toward Pasadena? He said, yeah, we get on the 134 toward Pasadena, and then we'll get on to the 5 from the 134 heading toward Pasadena. I said, Jimmy, there's no on-ramp from the 134 onto the 5 going that direction, not heading toward Pasadena. Sure there is. I said, Jimmy, I've lived in the valley my entire life. I've made that run 2,000 times. You got to get off the freeway, and then you got to go down, you know, Western or Victory or whatever, and then you get back on the 5. But you can't get on to the 5. He said, absolutely
you can. How much did that sway his opinion?
Zero. The fact that I grew up in the San Fernando Valley and I was 40 years old, I said, trust me, I have friends who live in Pasadena. You cannot get on to the 5 that way. He looked at me and he said, I went to the Costco in Burbank yesterday, and I took the 134, got right onto the 5, going north, and that's how I did it. And I stopped, and I went, oh, my God, do I have a brain tumor? Like, I was like, you did this yesterday? You did this yesterday. And then I started thinking, did they build a ramp in the last, like, 19 days? Because it's been almost a month since maybe they threw a quick ramp up that I'm not aware of.
You started doubting yourself.
I started doubting. I said, yesterday, I went to the Costco in Burbank yesterday, and this is how I got there. 134, on to the 5, right off to the Costco. I said, well, now I want to go this way, Jimmy, because I just have to see this ramp that doesn't exist. And he said, let's do it. And I said, all right. And we started heading the wrong direction because basically we were around Universal Studios and we were trying to get onto the 5, and now we're heading toward Pasadena. And at a certain point, we got off on Victory and started crossing the freeway and then heading over to Western. And I said, well, Jimmy, you do realize we just got off the freeway. And he was like, yeah, we're getting on the 5. And I said, but you said there was a ramp. Oh, and then he gave me this one. You going to argue about everything, or can we just drive?
Now you're the asshole.
Now I'm the asshole, because I kept bringing it up. And then
right.
I was the douche, right? I was like, I couldn't let it go. I said, but you did say, all right, already. Can we enjoy ourselves? We're going to Yosemite. Let's not argue.
Well, did you learn your lesson?
I learned a valuable lesson. So I said,
I said to Jimmy, I said, I swear to God, this stuff is bad. And he said, trust me, this chowder's fine. It's smoke. All right, now, here's how food poisoning works. It doesn't work like in the movies where the person eats one piece of sushi and then grabs their tummy and goes running for the bathroom.
Like Bridesmaids.
It kicks in about 8-10 hours later. So tape 2 episodes of The Man Show, get into the party bus, head to the City of Industry, go into the Spearmint Rhino. You know, we ate about 2 p.m. Now it's like 1 a.m. Everyone's getting a lap dance and like, oh, sweetie, easy. Easy with the grinding. Easy there. Yo, no, yeah, something will come out of me, but it's not. No, not what we're looking for. Not what we're looking for. Yep, they got white gravy and brown gravy, and this is going to be the brown stuff. And then, so everyone was kind of, but no one was really saying anything to anyone. Everyone's just kind of like, yeah, I got to use the bathroom. Tell Candy I'll be back. Tell don't have to go anywhere. Now, we all pile onto the bus at like 2 a.m., and it's kicking in to overdrive for everybody. And by the time we hit the Man Show parking lot at like 3 a.m., people were sprinting out of the bus just to explode like by shrubbery somewhere. Like, they were locked out of the building. Like, we couldn't, the whole place was shut down. But yes. Yeah, Jim.
Did he ever say, sorry about that? My bad, wrong call. You guys were right. Anything.
You guys know Jimmy very well. Yes. We all, a calligrapher, made everyone a written note on parchment paper with his apology. Now, are you kidding me? It never came up. It never came up again. And that's, but that's part of who he is. And that's a lot of how come he is who he is.
I agree.
I mean, that's what it takes to be that. You must be that person.
But there are a lot of people with that level of confidence that don't end up where Jimmy is. He's also super likable along the way.
Oh, yeah, super generous and super likable. Yeah, though, you know, back in the day, really, I liked you guys. My only beef was producer Frank.
Oh, yeah, he was weird.
Because Frank had a few things going on. One is, if you opened his newspaper and looked at the sports page, he'd freak out on you, number one.
It was ruined. He would not look at the newspaper.
But the thing that I always use Frank as an example. He just established himself as the cheapest man on the planet, right? Thus, when we would all go out to breakfast after the show, we'd all have to kick in and pay for Frank's breakfast.
Because he just doesn't pay for breakfast?
He's
or
cheap.
Anything.
Right.
Ever.
But
he would brag about having the same $2 bills in his wallet for like 2 weeks.
I was making $300 a week, and he was making $80,000 a year, and I would have
that's
to chip
how he
in
does it.
To pay for his breakfast, which always pissed me off. And the only time I saw Frank freak out is when he broke his forearm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he tripped walking.
He tripped walking
from his parking spot on the street into the station.
Down the ramp.
Right.
Well, they were closing the gate or right. something. And he tripped and he broke his forearm. And he woke his wife up every morning at 5 or 4:30 to drive him into work. And he drove an automatic. And he had a forearm cast. And I was like, Archie Manning played his entire NFL career with a forearm cast. And it didn't seem to slow him down that much.
A month later is when we found out she was still getting the kids up.
Yes.
And putting him in the car and then driving him to work.
He drove a Honda Civic. It was automatic. And he took surface streets to drive to work. But yet he got his poor wife. The only time I saw Frank freak out on Jimmy's when Jimmy badgered him about that, and eventually he freaked. Oh, no, Frank's wife freaked on him, who was a little bit scarier than Frank. Also, I don't know if you guys weren't in the room when the Booger Man tried to choke Jimmy. Were you?
Oh, I was, yeah.
You were like literally attempted to choke the life
out of... Explain the Booger Man. It's been a while.
The Booger Man...
he was homeless, right?
The Booger Man was a homeless guy who did Jimmy find him or who found him?
I don't know. He lived in his car.
He lived in his car and he got. They're never nice cars when you live in them. By the way, you know they should be nicer.
You never hear of someone living in their Aston Martin.
No, rarely. Mm-hmm. No. So he lived in his car like in a van. Jimmy found him. Jimmy got him on the radio, and later on, Booger Man tried to choke Jimmy for talking about fat injections Booger Man got in his penis.
And not fake not fake choking either. I mean, he went after him for real.
He literally tried to kill him. And here's all you need to know about radio. Do you guys remember why Booger Man got fired?
I don't mean.
I don't.
Yeah, not for attempting to kill a fellow employee, but for giving away a mountain bike to one of his friends who said he was caller 106.
Oh, that's right.
Because rules are rules, people. Go ahead and choke the morning guy.
Attempted murder's
fine. Attempt to kill the sports guy. No, that's just a slap on the hand, but you give away a fucking Huffy 12-speed, we got a serious issue here.
Wait, did he really get fat injections in his penis?
He did.
Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah, Jimmy.
Fat
yeah.
injections.
Yeah.
Taken out of other parts of his body and then inject his penis with it.
Mm-hmm. I guess he wanted girth.
How could you not bring that up?
Yeah. What's that?
For girth or length? Girth.
You can't, fat doesn't work for length.
How do you know?
Use your brain. You have to clip the tendon.
How do you know?
I'm telling you.
How?
I'll tell you how.
How do you know?
I have a very simple
how
and honest
do you know?
Answer. I was trying to large my cock one day. I tried bubble wrap. I tried a scarf. I tried everything. But eventually, no. Jimmy and I did a bit for the Man Show where we talked to all the dudes and all the different techniques. There's one where you kind of clip a tendon and you pull it out. It's basically...
Oh, like as if part of your penis is trapped in your body?
Yeah.
And you're just letting it out?
For me, it's the good part. I think it's like the best part, like the heart of the artichoke, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's in me. I can never get to that part of me. It's my nougaty center, you know what I mean? This hard candy veneer? No.
Yeah, that's just for show.
It's just for show. No, you clip this thing. No, I would sort of liken it to like, it's like a mailbox, and in order to get it a little higher off the lawn, you pull it out another few inches, but a good wind will knock it over. That's the problem. You lose a little lateral support. The other way is to do it through just weights. Like you literally just hang weights.
You stretch
off,
it?
Off your junk, yeah.
Where do they attach?
Balls? I mean, not that I would know.
Yeah, where they go? The end of your dork, you know?
I know, but I'm just...
Well, look, I mean,
is anyone
else
trying to feel like exactly, is there some sort of penis head-shaped groove in the weight?
Well,
just fall right off.
You know, I mean, it's like, did you see that thing Ray Lewis was playing with to keep his, you know, tricep on the bone? You know,
okay.
It's kind of like that. In my case, a little bigger, you know, but it's a device, you know, it's straps. I don't remember, some Velcro or something. It's the guy, it's never... The size of the penis, it's the size of the fight in the penis to me. You know what I mean? It's my
course,
grandfather.
Yeah.
Would say,
I think Jefferson said that, didn't he, Adam?
Yeah. What's that, Bean?
I think Jefferson said that.
Yeah, Jefferson that his said quote? That many years ago. And it was always the dude who wanted to enlarge his penis I found interesting, not the technique.
Yeah.
And then there was fat injections, and then there was like a fat graft thing on there and all that kind of stuff. By the way, all chicks want is a guy who pretends to listen and eats great pussy. So I don't get with... I never hear any chicks sitting around going, well, he can't eat pussy, and he doesn't hear a word I said, but boy, it's just cock fat.
I know.
Does that ever happen?
No.
No. So what are we focusing on, people? Yeah.
Ace Man, I got a Man Show question for you.
Sure.
And this is, I'm talking about the Man Show when you and Jimmy were doing it, not when it got good with Rogan.
Sure, yeah. stepped it up,
Jimmy was married at the time. I think you were single. But you had, obviously, dozens of, you know, Playmate model chicks on that show every week. And you would road trip with him, and you'd go down to Mexico. Was it just hot and cold running sex for you guys in the 90s?
Yeah, yep. No, I mean, I'm being honest. Jimmy and I would fuck the shit out of each other when we went to those places.
I mean,
when we went to Jamaica, I was balls deep.
Let me finish.
I was balls deep in Jimmy, he was balls deep in me, we were balls deep in each other. It never fucking
ended. Sometimes did you not even know where your balls started and his ended?
Yeah, it was that. It was,
that's the
it
best.
It was the yin and the wang, yeah. Yeah, you know, it was... It, it was weird. It was like there weren't like it was like a lot of naked chicks running around and
you guys were TV stars. I mean, they knew you and were probably excited to meet you, and they were working with you, and you're on location, and it just seemed like it would work to your advantage sometimes.
But I don't think either of you were closers.
The thing too is the Juggies looked at themselves as TV stars and us as the guys who told fart jokes who stood next to them. Where was better was MTV. Because MTV, you could probably speak to your boy Carson Daly about this, but MTV, if I worked in management for MTV, I wouldn't even pay my male employees. If they were on camera, I'd just be like, wait, you tired of getting your dick sucked? Come on, you should pay me. Because MTV's the greatest demo ever. It's just a bunch of drunken, hot 22-year-old chicks. You don't realize, like, they go, well, are you on TV or are you not on TV? Are you famous or aren't you famous? Well, what are we talking about? Are we talking about MTV? Are we talking about C-SPAN? Because you're freaking be all over C-SPAN.
Yeah,
you're not getting...
Right, like Eric Nies is probably getting more than Wolf Blitzer.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, it's CNN, not C-SPAN.
Absolutely. So the reality is, like, Comedy Central was cool, but Comedy Central was a lot of douchey dudes, you know, like, hey, we're the Juggies, hey, you know, MTV, much, much better in the chick department.
Today's episode is brought to you by Geico, because Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? And we all know the answer. Of course you would. After all, who doesn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all the things in your life, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with the homeowner's, condo, or renter's coverage. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes an easy choice. In fact, how easy is it, Gio?
Well, Chris, it's Geico easy.
It certainly is. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save. And that was Kevin and Bean live from Amalfi back in 2013. Amalfi the restaurant, not the wonderful coast in Italy. All right.
Adam was paying a fortune to fly people out. He's like, I really love Kevin and Bean. And the reason I chose clip was I've actually been, and speaking of content, I've been doing, there's a whole bunch of stuff that I do that people aren't aware of. I have to do behind the scenes that I can't even talk about sometimes. Not because they're so secret, just because they're so boring. And I've been going through a bunch of old Kevin and Bean content, and it was like, oh, wow, this would be such a cool thing to play now. It's such a relevant part of Adam's career, and it's ever present in everything he does, is that reaching back to those calls as Mr. Bertram.
I know. So thanks, Kevin and Bean. I owe you a lot. And Gio, I'm sure we'll all be seeing the fruit of your labors soon enough. All right. That'll do it for today's episode of Corolla Classics. But tune in tomorrow. We do release a Sunday episode in the Corolla Classics feed, so subscribe to that if you're listening to this on The Adam Carolla Show. And we'll see you there. My name's Chris Loxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Oh, and get it on. See you tomorrow.
Saddle up and get ready for Westerns Weeks on Pluto TV, all for free. We're coming in blazing with favorites like True Grit and Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Or immerse yourself in binge-worthy series like Yellowstone and Walker, Texas Ranger. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. The best part? It's free. No credit card, no sign-up, no fees. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now.